KSDP, 8:30 a.m. in Sandpoint, K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove, KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay, KFPS, 88.1 FM in Falls Pass, and KKQA, 88.1 FM in Akutan, Alaska.
Yeah, baby. Oh, yeah. I never knew how important you were to me. Yeah, baby. So I stopped and look at it. You're the best part of my life. You're my strength, my guiding light. It took me a while to see that you're everything. You're everything to me. You're my heart. You're my soul.
revivified with a new sense of well-being. This is NPR.
to be what you wanted us to be. We are what we are. That's the way it's going to be. If you don't know, you can't educate us for no equal opportunity. Talking about my freedom, people freedom and liberty. Yeah, we've been cutting on the wine press much too long.
Jawa, wa, 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 wa. can beat a man, you cannot beat the world. But as a world is like a two-edged sword. Singers and players will be there. You shall go down in the valley of Jehoshaphat.
What a man!
For God just said, a super trap, to catch all you, bionic rap,
little bit of the Upsetters. Bring it down just another notch. This is Virgil. You tuned to KSDP. Lost a little bit of satellite connection there for a moment. And we're having some reggae to fill in the time. APradio.org. Had a little bit of downtime. Coming up, another episode of Paleo Nerds from Tim Troll, the artist that, you know, does pretty intricate drawings of salmon and their lifetimes and philosophies. He also does a show, and he's focused on dinosaurs. You're welcome. We usually have that at 2 p.m. We're going to have a little bit of a bonus episode today as we figure out how the satellite system is faring. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for your patience. Lloyd and Carey, Downside Up.
Out of all the stations, this station supply all the popular stations with popular music.
I saw?
Yes, Mr. T.
Well, if I saw, for our this year music.
With all pleasure.
They say the world is spinning around.
Yeah.
I say the world is upside.
You got to believe it.
They say the world is spinning around.
Yeah.
I say the world is upside down.
Monica. Nama. You don't feel it. Whether you want to believe it or not, you've got to. Creation.
The people that you meet,
I was here.
So hard to define.
I can tell the nation.
They say the world is spinning around.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I say the world is upside down.
You got to believe me.
They say the world is spinning around.
I tell you.
I say the world is upside down.
Uncle Judge. Pepe.
Do your thing, brother.
Stay around.
And get round, because you have to leave this town. And I know you don't want to leave this town that I'm putting down.
Salamana Gonde,
Banana Monday,
Quiz on a Tuesday,
spinning around.
Mariana
Wednesday, upside down.
Go to work on Thursday,
spinning around.
Get your beat on Friday,
upside down.
To market Saturday,
cool your wheel and Sunday.
I tell you,
baby, my name is Mr. Pleasure, waiting on your ledger.
I sailed from Croatia, I gone there, I was here.
Born on a Monday,
so I can tell the nation.
Upside
you
down.
Got to believe it. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I say the world is upside down.
Monica. Nama.
Line them up and send them come.
You yeah. Don't feel it. I feel it. So I know it. I'm Croatia.
I'm a paleo nerd, don't you understand? I'm a paleo nerd.
Hey, Rainy!
Hello, David. It has been so long, man.
Yeah, it has been long. We took a little break, a paleo nerd break, and it's great to be back because we have some, oh man, some awesome stuff to talk about.
Oh, tonight. We have really cool people coming up and things to talk about. But yeah, it was much needed because, you know, doing the podcast, it's a lot
well, we
of
were
fun.
Doing it. Well, we were doing it every week, and we had deadlines, and I had to edit, and you had to do artwork, and
I had to go traveling. I went traveling, yeah, so
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
So here we are. Great. We're back.
We're back, and we've got some episodes coming up of some really awesome paleontologists and some highfalutin people in the scientific community. So
some heavy hitters, heavy hitters
coming up. Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm back in the studio, and I'm having a good time. You know what I'm doing, Dave?
Drawing.
I'm drawing.
Painting. Drawing and painting.
I'm doing another one of my pattern drawings. You actually own one of my pattern drawings. I did Ammonites.
Yeah, the Ammonites. Oh, you're doing a pattern. So that's like... That's like a wallpaper that you can wow.
So this has been many decades of just every now and then I get some time and do another pattern. And I plan to finish up all these patterns. This is maybe the second to last one.
And what is it of?
And then I'm going to do release the patterns into the world and, you know, as different things. But this one is I'm drawing plankton.
Oh, you mean like Ernest Haeckel plankton?
yeah. Kind of like that. Ernest Haeckel, whatever. Yeah, Haeckel was... an evolutionary biologist, a German dude. But anyways, I have been diving deep into plankton, so to speak, and
they're the most
things.
Amazing structures, and they're translucent, and they have spikes, and they have coils. And
there's the two basic kind, the phytoplankton and the zooplankton. So one are the plants, and one are the animals.
Oh, right.
So zooplankton and phytoplankton. And here's one thing I'd learned, man, that kind of blew my mind. And this is what's fun, is that when I do these drawings, I like to study up. I get an expert or two to stop by, or I call them up, and I talk about things. But is a barnacle more closely related to a shrimp or to a clam?
Clam.
Got it wrong.
No way. You mean it's a crustacean? A barnacle is a crustacean?
Yeah, basically think about it as a shrimp that just said, why should I keep going around? You know, they're very... closely related to shrimp. It's like a shrimp that
because when you look in a barnacle, you can see a little kind of mouth in there, like a little clam mouth.
Yeah, and what these are crustaceans that, like, in their larval stage are swimming around. They have one, like, eye in the middle, and they're, like, looking around.
They're
and
a monoclops.
Monoclops. And then they find, and they look so bizarre, like some alien spaceship, and then they decide to park themselves in a rock, and they kind of build their little fort around them.
Wow, I never knew that.
And they have their little filter feeders, but then get this. This is sort of the R-rated thing about it, or maybe the X-rated.
How do they have sex?
Well, they have to be able to be close enough to another barnacle to be able to reach over with their private bits.
Right.
And inseminate them.
Wow.
But they have both. But they have to be within distance of each other, so they have to be in a... Well, you know...
Like on a pier. Well, when you see a pier, there's all these barnacles.
They're covered, but they're doing is that, you know, they're hanging out, they're filter feeding, and then when the mood strikes, they...
Right.
And it's six times their body length, dude.
Really? So do they have the long... Is it bigger?
Than
an Argentine duck, like John Long's book?
Yeah.
Really? In relation to body?
Like the most incredible length of any...
And you're talking about a barnacle penis.
Yeah, I am.
Okay. This is a science show. We can say that.
So I learned that. It just kind of blew my mind.
That's brilliant. So are you drawing the larval stage in your plankton wallpaper?
Yeah. And actually, you know, anything that can't swim against the tide, that's what plankton is. So jellyfish are... but then our larval fish, I got to throw the... You know, I have a vertebrate bias since I kind of have a hint of a backbone. And then also learning, too, that we are basically the spawn of sea squirts.
Right.
But we'll get into that on another episode. Yeah. We have some experts coming up. So.
Can you look up a plankton expert? Because that would be an awesome... Because, they're the bottom of the food chain, and without them, the planet dies.
Right. Oxygen, basically, half the oxygen in the planet, almost half the oxygen is from the ocean.
But they also are carbon sinks and creators of oil. Yes. So, their dead bodies form oil.
Yep. And as we know, the chalk cliffs of Kansas are basically plankton. And the white cliffs of Dover are plankton. Yeah. They are coccolithophores.
And the little stick you do your alphabet with on the blackboard is made of coccolithophores.
Wow.
Okay, that's awesome. Me, real quickly, I've been, since I'm an empty nester, I've gotten back full scale into my radio control model airplanes. I mean, full on. There's a local flying field 5 minutes from my house. where I've met amazing bunch of guys.
Radio control nerds like
yourself.
Radio
control nerds, yeah, but check it out. Most of them are engineers and aviation experts from the days of the 50s and 60s rocket and space exploration and aircraft engineer development. And these guys, that was their careers. And it's an amazing wealth of knowledge.
So you guys fly your little airplanes around?
Well, they ain't little. Some of them have 6-8 foot wingspans and look exactly like the real thing, a quarter scale. I have a quarter scale of a Spitfire, a British Spitfire, which is amazing. It's got an electric motor and flies at about 120 miles an hour. So with retractable landing gear. I mean, these things are, if you were to say they're toys, you would make all the gentlemen out there cry.
Is it all gentlemen?
Yeah, the gentlemen.
Is it a dude thing, or
sadly, there's no women, really. But I think that's the nature of this hobby, and everybody could be my grandpa. But I did go to a, it's called the Ventura Comets. That's the name of the group, and I'm a member. We had a meeting on a Tuesday night at 7 p.m. at a local rec center, and I haven't been to a 7 o'clock meeting since Boy Scouts.
Since Al-Anon.
Yeah, since Al-Anon, that's right. So anyway, that's what I've been doing. It's been a lot of fun. Radio control airplane.
Wow, cool.
So I'm really excited today for our guest.
I've been lucky enough to meet our guest a couple times over
really?
The years.
Oh, you've met him.
Well, yeah, in passing, but I've also called him up on the phone when I need some guidance and things. But we're talking about Jim Kirkland.
Right, who currently is the Utah State paleontologist.
Yeah. And he's like the dinosaur man. Like, you want to talk dinosaurs. I was wondering, actually, you know, Utah's got some of the best trilobites in the world. If I could talk to Jim about getting a trilobite permit, but it's probably not really even on his radar. But,
they have like the best collection of dinosaurs on the planet. Utah has everything.
Without a doubt. Let's put him to the test. He says the Brits have a good fossil record, too, but.
Yeah, he says, but not as good as Utah, though. I mean, Utah really covers, everything, but mostly the Jurassic and Cretaceous are where all the dinosaurs and fish are found. And I'm blown away by his geologic maps and stratigraphy that he's created. He's an amazing geologist as well. And how many papers does he have on ResearchGate? 197.
197, a jillion citations, you know, all that kind of stuff.
It is prolific, the amount of research and publications he's contributed to the scientific community. It's phenomenal. And that's going to be my question to him, is going to be based on that.
I identify with him already because he's the same vintage as me. He was born in the great year of 1954. And
right.
He says it all started with the dinosaur toy set. And I'm pretty sure we got the same set. So I kind of want to ask him about that, and then we'll dive right into dinos.
Great. Well, let's give Jim Kirkland, or James. I think it's just Jim, right?
Just call him Jim. Yeah, he goes by Jim.
Yeah, Jim
Besides
Kirkland.
The papers, James Kirkland, but Dr. Jim Kirkland.
Oh, he's a doctor.
He has a PhD, yes, sir.
Oh, fantastic. He got to be. Yeah. All right, let's call Jim.
Hey, Dave, meet Jim Kirkland, state paleontologist of Utah with the Utah Geological Survey and a self-described paleo cheerleader for the entire state of Utah. So, Jim, it is so good to see you again, my friend, and meet my friend Dave.
Hey, Dave, good to meet you.
Oh, pleasure.
Come visit us sometime.
Oh, I'm going to, after this interview, I'm out the door and heading to Utah. So, but the real question is, Jim, are you a paleo nerd?
Oh, utterly. I mean, when Ray's picture of Paleo Nerds came out, I'm like, that's me.
You know, Jim, I relate to you on, well, many levels, but whenever I meet someone else who's born in the great year of 1954, and especially one who's a dino nerd like you and I, we have to share the same kind of genetic, historic DNA. And I remember I was reading up on you that there was this pivotal point in your young life when Dad gave you a dinosaur set of toys. And I think I got the same set because I think that's what locked it in for me. How about you?
1959, the Big Eight, Tyrannosaurus, Trachodon, Allosaurus.
I have that whole set, dude.
Yeah.
And then there were playing cards after that. And then they and also what happened too is they started to happening. There was a little dino wave back then. People kind of forget this before Jurassic Park, but dinosaur toys came in cereal boxes. Remember that?
Oh yeah.
And that locked it in for me too.
Oh yeah. Red Rose Tea had little dinosaur cards.
Really?
Collected them all.
Wow.
It kills me that I don't know where that collection is now.
Well, so you were in love with dinosaurs from the get-go. You were that young kid like I was. You could say all the dinosaur names and everybody was impressed. And you wanted to be a paleontologist your whole life?
Oh, yeah. I was telling people that when I was 5.
Wow.
I mean, the neighbors, I'd be walking down the street and they'd say, ask them any question.
Really?
But someone gave you some bad advice on what school to go to.
Isn't that true?
High school was, they didn't know what to do with me there. You know, this is in New England, pretty far from, the fossil fields. So my guidance counselor, what's paleontology? Going through her book. Oh, it's a subdiscipline of geology. Going through the book. Where do you study geology? Oh, schools of mines. So I ended up going to the New Mexico School of Mines. Basically, the south was warm. It was cold winter in New England. But it really did, it did me good. It just ripped the Band-Aid off for being a New Englander and made me a Westerner.
But that's a great discipline, though, studying geology. You were forced to study geology rather than paleontology, but you can't know paleontology without being well-versed in geology.
Yeah, I'm a biostratigrapher. If people say, what is your specialty? And I date rocks using fossils. I just have particularly big index fossils as opposed to forearms.
So biostratigraphy for the layman is basically the animals that live in a certain
level.
In the layer, right?
Yeah, because basically as we've studied the history of life, and this is what was the founding of geology, William Stratus Smith, who invented the science of biostratigraphy over 200 years ago, made the first geologic map in the world, sometimes referred to as the map that changed the world.
Yeah.
Basically, animals live for a fairly short time interval. And when a new taxon appears, it's able to get around quickly. That short time interval is going to approach a horizontal layer, and we can use that to date things. Other things, they appear someplace, migrate over, hundreds of thousands of years to another place. It has an irregular distribution in time and space. But the things we work on, we want to have taxa that spread out rapidly. Dinosaurs have long legs. They can walk pretty fast if they're in an interconnected area. And I'm using dinosaurs to date rocks instead of the marine fossils that I was trained on.
Right. That's one of the things I learned early on as I kind of came back to paleontology in my adult years. I used to assume that, T-Rex is from the Cretaceous. So for me, it was all of the Cretaceous. And it took a while to realize, T-Rex was only around for, you're lucky to have a species that lasts for a million years, right? I mean, that's remarkable, right?
Pretty much all species where we have temporal controls, good dating, which Western U.S. is real good for that. Nothing survived. No species goes for more than 500,000 years.
Half million.
And certainly, genera generally don't go more than 1,000,000 years. But you look at things like iguanodon, if there was anything like iguanodon found anywhere on the planet for a long time, for 100 years, they'd call it iguanodon.
Right.
Same with Megalosaurus. Megalosaurus was, intercontinental and through almost the entire Mesozoic for any big theropod that we weren't really sure where it fit.
So that would be a junk taxon.
Was a bunch of them.
Right.
And in recent years, we've straightened this stuff out. Iguanodon has been culled down to Iguanodon bernisartensis from Belgium as the type material.
In relation to dating, they use zircon, which is almost indestructible. But I was under the impression zircon is formed in igneous rock. So how do you date something, for example, in the Cedar Mountain Formation using zircon? Is that because there was lavas and intrusions at that time?
Mainly we're getting it probably from volcanic ashes, from volcanic explosions. And for this time interval that I focus on, Southern California, southwestern parts of Nevada. And there were some pretty big volcanic areas. These were island chains like Japan that were periodically colliding into western North America and leading to coastal volcanics down in that part of the world. And those ashes, those zircons come down, they get reworked. So, you know, we'd use detrital zircons to get maximum ages on things because it has to be there.
So they're Jurassic and Cretaceous zircons then formed.
Absolutely.
Oh, right.
Yeah, we have on the Colorado Plateau, we got a lot of volcanic ashes. I mean, there's some intervals that I would, you know, I'm pretty desperate to get a good date on.
Right.
But we have great dates on a lot of intervals. I mean, dates that are within, say, 100,000, a couple hundred thousand.